What's up everyone, this is Dariusz Kolbarczyk, co-founder of MG Poland, JS Poland, AngularMaster.dev and WorkshopFest.dev. Welcome back to the Angular Master Podcast. Today we've got a special guest straight from Grenoble, France, senior front-end engineer, web enthusiast, part of the Angular team, ladies and gentlemen, Matthew Rigler. Hi Matt, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Having a good day. And you?
Yeah. For those who don't know you yet, please tell us about yourself.
So yeah, I'm Matt. I'm a software engineer in France. I've been working with frontend for over 10 years and somehow joined the Angular team, let's say a year ago, and I'm collaborating with them on the open source basis. So I'm not full-time working on it. It's pastime for me. And having fun.
So can you explain the concept of zoneless change detection and how it differs from the traditional change detection mechanism in Angular?
Change detection has always been with Zone.js. Zone.js is the scheduler for zone detection. So it determines when there should be a change detection in the app, mostly when you have some async mechanism that you have in the application. So every promise, so an HTTP call, for example, every click, every event, etc. And these are the things that Zone.js is able to catch and say, okay, I heard this, and I will schedule change detection. When in zoneless application, you won't have zone, and the framework will have other mechanisms to determine when to run change detection. Mostly the two the main cases will be using things like the async pipe, so with observables, or in terms of DX, you will prefer probably using the signals.
What led you to explore zoneless change detection, and what are the primary benefits you find?
So there are several advantages to drop Zone.js. The first one being that Zone.js is around, I think, 30 kilobytes that you cannot lazy load that is hard into your bundle, and dropping this will allow you to load to reduce the bundle size, but also to reduce the start because it's quite slow, let's say, to start a Zone.js. The second point is when you use Zone, you introduce the Zone concept into apps, and you can be inside and outside of zones, and this can trigger some difficulties, makes the DX, it makes it less easy. And there is also the third main point is Zone.js is on the safe side of change detection. So it prefers to run too much change detection than not enough, because having too much makes your app always up to date with the data. Having not enough, you will run in situation where your data doesn't appear on your app. So these are the three reasons we want to. Having it run too much can lead to worse performance. So change detection is quite well optimized, but running too much will worsen your performances. So the idea is having apps that will run when they require the change detection, so only when it's really required and not, let's say, too much like we have right now with Zone.js.
By the way, how did your adventure with Angular begin?
It started really almost randomly. So I heard about Angular, and the first project I had to work on was with Angular.js. So I started with Angular.js, worked around a year with that, before moving to Angular, and it just were the circumstances that led me to work to it because on it with it more, because they were the projects that I was working on. So it wasn't a conscious choice, let's say. So it came from work, and year after year, I worked more and more and more on Angular, and the tipping point for me was when I try to investigate performance, try to understand how change detection works. So I started to investigate the implementation of Angular. So I had the repo on my computer, the code base, etc., reading the files, etc. And just one day, it was a slow day at work, reading some code, and I just saw some. It was a directive that has a slight refactoring. I just thought, well, let's do it, make the change, open NPR, and let's see how it goes. And a few days after, the team helped me a bit tuning the PR, having the right commit message, etc. And 3 days or 4 days after, the PR landed was there. Hey, yeah, I'm a contributor. At the time, there was all on every release, all the people that contributed to it, and was really happy to see my name on such a major project. That's how it started with me almost 2 years ago.
Wow, this is amazing. Let's back to the technical questions. How does zoneless change detection impact the performance and debugging experience in Angular applications?
It impacts the performance in a sense that, like I said, it often runs too much. In terms of DX, what the Angular team will recommend is using signals. So when you will use signals, you will just indicate every time something changes, say, hey, this change, you should schedule change detection. So what will happen is that you will tell Angular, hey, something changed, just schedule something. You won't do like doing detect changes with this, which was an explicit call to change detection. Here you will just say, okay, I update my data, and Angular will be able to just schedule from the fact of updating it, schedule the change detection. So you will have less, and it will only run when it's required. So you will have better performances from this. And the second point is also, imagine, because Zone.js patches every event, for example, you introduce a graph library with some mouse events. So every time you would do a mouse move, it would trigger change detection. This isn't great. You have to you have to run outside the zone, etc. So it makes it harder to just to attain the best performances. So it will help you. It will help, let's say, less experienced developer achieve better performances. And the debugging, just dropping Zone.js, will help you clean up also the call stack. Because when you have the call stack, we'll see that there is a huge chunk of it that are just functions from the implementation of Zone.js. So just removing Zone will help you just have a cleaner call stack. It will only be your own code and the code from the framework itself. So it will ease also the debugging experience.
Can you walk us through the technical implementation of the zoneless change detection scheduler in Angular 18?
Yes. So what will come, what we currently have, so it will probably what we will get in V18. We still have around 3 weeks of development before feature freeze. So what we currently have is what the team calls a rough race. When I say rough, it's RAF, so request animation frame. So we have a scheduler. When, for example, a signal or an observable would just say, hey, something has been updated, just prepare to run change detection. And when we're speaking about scheduling, it is that not every signal update, for example, will trigger one change detection. But if you have 3-4 signal updates in a very short time frame, it will just schedule one change detection. So what we have today is mostly it will either be the timeout or the request animation frame, the first that fires from this both. This is why we call it a race. When either of those fires first, it will trigger change detection if an observable or signal told the framework to schedule it. This is mostly the idea.
How does the change detection scheduler interface work, and what are the advantages of using a timeout-based scheduler?
Having the timeout and having the request animation frame, it's Those are browser APIs. Those, let's say, it's the browser itself determines when to call it. It's they're integrated into the event loop, and we just use two different possibilities to just say, hey, it's almost like saying, hey, when you're ready. So it's like by doing the rest, run change detection ASAP. So when there is nothing else happening, let's say on the framework side. This is mostly the idea. So when we notify the scheduler, because what the framework would say to the scheduler, hey, I notify you, be ready when you can run change detection for us.
So with the introduction of signals in Angular v17, how they facilitate zoneless change detection?
We consider that the DX will be the best with zoneless with signals, because they are quite easier to use than the observables. I won't say that observables are bad. I love them. But from a DX perspective, signals are way more easier to use. They also have separate use cases. But for the signals, every time you will do an update, when I say either update or sets, internally the framework will tell the scheduler, hey, updated something, no, I notify you, and be ready to run whenever you can. And just by saying, hey, I update the signals, this is what will schedule change detection. It makes it really easy. And it says really when you update a data somewhere, it will just prepare for the change detection.
You are now listening to the Angular Master Podcast by Angie Poland. Listen, code, repeat. All you need to know to become a super Angular developer. Make sure to hit the subscribe button and drop us a cool comment. And don't miss out our second show, the JavaScript Master Podcast, where you find tons of fantastic JavaScript topics. Can existing Angular application easily transition to using zoneless change detection? And what steps should developers take?
Yeah, this is quite a tricky one. Because existing app, we won't recommend to go full signals and break everything. For example, if you have today an app that runs mostly on push with the async pipe, you will probably have a, let's say, quite smooth transition toward zoneless. You will be able to enable it. You will still have to test it, everything, if it works. But if your libraries support zoneless, if your framework, your app itself, sorry, the app itself uses heavily on push with the async pipe, you will quite possibly be able to transition to zoneless easily. There won't be automatic transitions. It's too hard. We won't say go full signal because it's a major refactoring and existing apps that have several years. It's way too hard, way too risky to do it. But there are some cases where we say, okay, with the async pipe, for example, you will be able to probably go to zoneless. Just to explain, the async pipe will do exactly the same thing as what the signals do. Every time there is a new value, hey, we will notify the scheduler, prepare for a change detection.
What are the potential risks or downsides of using zoneless change detection in production environments?
The bigger risk is you won't have the change detection if your app is not ready for it. So you will miss some info on the screen. So in any case, if you transition to zoneless, you will have to heavily test your app to see how it reacts, if it works well or not. But I can assure you that if you don't use the async pipe everywhere, you'll probably have some issues and you will have to look either to use the observables or go to signals, but there will be the two main possibilities to go towards zoneless.
Moving on to the add4 block in Angular v17, how does it improve upon the traditional ng4 directive?
It's an interesting question. So the four block is part of the what we call the new control flow syntax. So having if, at, and switch. At switch. So with the four block, we have two, let's say two optimization, or maybe three. that happened here. So the first thing, we before we had a structural directives that were using containers and everything to just choose to iterate over templates. And when you have those in your HTML, in your template file, those are converted by the compiler into instruction. And by using the new for block, you will just have less instruction, so it will be a bit smaller. I think there is around, you can gain around maybe 5% of the size from the template if you use the add for block. This is the third thing. The second one we have in terms of optimization is the reconciliation. Yeah, that's it. So when you have a for block and you update it, so the data is updated, the algorithm that was behind it has been rewritten and optimized to just improve the performance when you are comparing, let's say, the previous list to the new one before the update. So you will get some performance here. And there is third one that is more oriented, DX-oriented, so developer experience. With the for block, we have the track function that is now required. So developers will have to explicitly tell to the framework how they should compare the items and match them to the DOM element. Before we had with the NG4, we did what we call an identity match. So if you had an object, it will just check the reference. So if the reference changed, it will delete the node or recreate the node. And that's what's the one of the most costly operation the framework does, deleting and creating DOM nodes. If you don't use the right comparison, the right tracking function, you could degrade your performances. And this is why now we don't have a default tracking one, and the developers will have to be aware of the one that's the best for the use case. So the teams recommends in a lot of cases, if you're not swapping rows, for example, just you use the index. Having a dollar index as the track function will just tell, okay, index 0 is always the first element in the DOM, index 1 is the second element, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the three optimizations that we bring in with the add for block.
How do deferable views work and what impact do they have on lazy loading components in Angular?
The defer blocks were probably my favorite feature we had under V17. Those are amazing. The basic idea is behind it, we have a declarative API to say just, okay, in my HTML, I'm telling you this component, you can lazy load it and having some condition on it. Let's say you want to do it on hover, on click, or let's say if the placeholder appears on the viewport, for example, when you're scrolling, say until you haven't scrolled, you won't load the bottom components. We have these kind of triggers, and having a declarative API just means that we can have an implementation today that could change later, but we just declare an intention. This is the way it works. And technically, what we have behind it is actually quite basic. It's just a compiler, the Angular compiler, just tells that the static import we have of the component becomes a dynamic one. And from this point, because it's a dynamic import, the bundler that happens during the bundling that happens, let's say, after the Angular compilation, we just see, oh, okay, this file is loading dynamically. I don't have to put it in the main bundle. So it will reduce the initial bundle size, which will improve the performance, improve your core vital score, et cetera, et cetera. So we just have a easy optimization by just saying, hey, I declare this component as being lazy loaded, and it will just improve quite easily performance. There are some catches around this, but mostly if the component is not used elsewhere and just here, if you do defer, it will be lazy loaded and improve your performances.
Can you discuss the performance improvements achieved with the new add for block compared to previous iterations of Angular?
The best would be actually to check. I think we have a blog article on the Angular blog around this. There is a screenshot of a several framework comparison, and we can see that it brought some better performances into the in the simple run of the art4 block, and where it was we knew before that mostly when you're swapping rows in a table, for example, the performance were not that great before v17, and the new art4 blocks bring improvements around that. And also I noted we don't have any memory leaks anymore, because I know we still have right now an open issue with some leaks sometimes with the ng4. So my recommendation today is go all in into the art4 block. It will only be better.
How does the track property in the art4 block contribute to those performance gains?
You will have today three possibilities. The first one, it's the one, let's say, that the team would say probably the default one is using $ index, saying to the tracking function, okay, match the DOM element to the index of your array, for example. Second possibility is, say, you can pass directly an ID. Imagine you have an array with each element having a different ID. You could just say, okay, for item of my array, saying a semicolon track, and you can say item.id, and saying yes. Now you can have easily you can easily track the ID without having to create a function into your component itself. So it's all defined into the template, and you don't have to write it anymore into the component. And the third possibility is what I'm thinking of. Third one is actually just using the reference. If you prefer to use, in some particular cases, the reference itself, you just say track item, and there you go, it just works. So just know choosing the right one for the right performance and the one of the goals you need to achieve. For example, when you use immutability, so just say you have an array with elements. If you use the identity, just tracking the item, every time you will update one item, it will actually change the reference. So every time it will delete the node, recreate the node, etc. So it can be costly, for example, to use the identity tracking if you rely on immutability.
What are some of the common pitfalls developer may encounter when using the art4 block, and how can they be mitigated?
Typically, it's what I just explained, is having the wrong function for your use case can worsen your performances. Deleting too much DOM elements will negatively impact the performances, because those are really the ones of the operations that are the most costly. If you have a list of 100 items and you're using the identity tracking, and you updated the whole list, it will just delete first 100 items and recreate them. So the best idea would be, if you use just the index, for example, we just say okay for the same index, it will keep the node. But what Angular will do, it will update the binding. So it will just update the content of it, but keeping the nodes. So we'll still have less DOM interaction. So just better performance by just knowing which element, which tracking is better. And in the case you use immutability, for example, probably the best choice would be to refer to the ID of the item, saying, okay, the ID doesn't change, so the item is still the same. But for example, you updated the name and a nickname on the item, so it will just update the bindings into the DOM and just delete and recreate the DOM element.
How does Angular's new template syntax enhance the separation between control flow and declarative HTML?
This one also, I love this because recently I had to work on a V15 project and had to go back to NGEF and NG4. And I don't know how we did cope with this all before. There must have been a Stockholm syndrome. The thing is, now you will have the HTML part, that's the declarative part of our code, really separated from the control for the condition. So the for loops, the if conditions, and the switch. So you have a visual separation of what's declarative and what's actually the control flow. It, to me, it's so much more natural to write templates. You don't have the NG4 somehow hidden into the element itself. So you see directly what is actually a control flow part, or and what is just the DOM, so the HTML.
Regarding the state of change detection in Angular V17, how does the introduction of signals alter the landscape?
So with V17, the team introduced a so-named local change detection. That's the first improvement we saw of the first optimization that was allowed by signals. So signals basically create a dependency tree. So it will allow the framework to know what component has been deleted because some values have been updated somewhere. This means that, for example, if a signal gets dirty for whatever reason, the component itself, or at least the template itself, will become dirty. In these cases, we won't have to update the whole component tree. And this is where the team introduced some what they called traversal nodes. For example, like I said before, on push and the async pipe, if the value was updated, we got another value, all the parents will be dirtied to allow the change detection to go down to the leaf that went that was dead. Because before V17, there was no possibility to just say, okay, update this node, because change detection starts at the root component at the top. And there was no way to just say, okay, go from the top and go to the dirty one, because all the parents had to be also marked as dirty to be to access this one. What signals, it allows to introduce the traversal nodes. So it's a component that will be reached by change detection, but change detection will actually be skipped on this node because it wasn't marked as dirty by a signal. So it means that you will have regular change detection that will be able to reach dirty components and also skip the ones that hasn't been marked as dirty. So it means having less component checked is better performances.
Definitely. So this is the concept of glocal.
Yeah, that's what I like to call is glocal change detection. Glocal, why? Because when I say it's local, it means only the dirty component will be checked, but it's still global. We are not yet in what single component will bring. We still start at the top. It will still check all the non-on-push components, but all the on-push, only the one that have been dirtied by the signals, will be checked. So we have still the global change detection, but for the unpush one, the word signal, we have local. So what I would say, it's local.
What are the key differences between mark for check and mark ancestor for traversal in the context of change detection?
Mark for check is a public API on the change detector ref. It will just tell the component, okay, this component is dirty. It will be checked at the next change detection run. So when you call mark for check, every parent will be marked for check, so mark as dirty into the framework. internally, when a signal will mark something dirty, it won't use macro check. It will just say, okay, this component is dirty, but be ready. I'm telling you, the parents, I will need to be accessible into the global change detection, but it's not necessary to check all the parents. So the parents with the mark traversal, which is a private API, so the name and knowing this is not really important, but saying that internally the framework tells the parent component, okay, this one you need it will be accessed by change detection, but it won't run it. It will just keep it, skip it to just reach the leaf dirty component.
How do you foresee the future of change detection in Angular, especially concerning zoneless and local change detection strategies?
So mostly we'll have, in terms of zoneless, you will have two big possibilities. Either go with signals, probably if you are either refactoring your app currently or if you're starting a new app, or you will use the observable with the async pipe. That's the two possibilities, going zoneless, and this is what will trigger for you to change detection, either with the async pipe or either when updating your signals. This is mostly it. And the future holds the evolution that will come later, not in V18, the signal components will have a different approach, a less global approach of change detection. But this is still very, that still requires a lot of work from the team and isn't well defined yet. So I cannot go into details because they are not known yet exactly how they will work. There will be a lot of communication around this when this will happen. I don't have any data around around this.
With Angular evolving towards a performance-first approach, what other feature of improvements can we expect in the future releases?
Partial hydration. So you knew that before in 16.17, this team introduced hydration. So it allowed to having server-side rendering. It renders on the server in HTML, ship it to the clients, and the app bootstraps. Before we had, before this, we had what we called destructive hydration. So the DOM was shipped, the app was shipped with it, but it would just trash the HTML and recreate from scratch. With hydration, what happens? The DOM stays, but the Angular app is able to bootstrap itself and just make the component live just by keeping the same DOM, which means that you won't have any flash. So in terms of performance, it's way much better than what we had before. With what we call partial hydration, you will have an improvement around this because you will still ship the same HTML, but imagine you have in your HTML some deferred blocks. So you've got some elements. Imagine you have a online shop. You will have some elements you can buy, etc. You will ship the whole page, so it will be totally visible, but it will only ship the JavaScript for, let's say, the main menu and the header, for example. All the other elements are not shipped yet. I mean, all the JS, the JavaScript code for these components won't be shipped. And the application would just bootstrap the bare minimum and it will improve the performance because you will only ship HTML, so your rendering will be instant, and you will have way less JavaScript that's been sent with it. So we'll have everything on the view and have minimum code shipped to the client. And by the time you're interacting with some components, I will just trigger the loading of the components, bootstrap it. Hydrate the elements of the DOM, and it will be a normal Angular app. That's the biggest improvement that will come, if not in the V18, in the minors of V18.
What feedback have you received from the Angular community regarding those new features and changes, and how has it influenced the development roadmap?
the team has some, let's say, some constraint from what they need to develop. Performance is one that is important. This is why, for example, Zonas has been worked on a lot. Besides all the features that come from, let's say, from what they have to cover for in terms of features, there are in the, let's say, in the backlog, in the issues we have on GitHub, some features that if you sort by thumbs up, for example, you can see the ones that are more important for the community that the people want. And the team did have a look at the top items of them and were thinking that let's, beside all the amazing new features that's coming, also provide some of the most wanted one. So they took some of the items at the top of the list. For example, we will get default content for a content projection that is new that will come with V18. And also the top one was having an observables for the form controls that were able to emit every time some state changes around a form control when I say state and other, if it's enabled, disabled, that the validator is pending, that it's been touched, dirty, pristine, the value change, etc. It's what we call a unified state control change. So the team has been listening to what the community wants and try to provide, beside the things that are required from their side, also what the community looks for.
What vision do you have for the future of Angular, especially considering the shift towards zoneless and local change detection mechanism?
The main topics that has been worked on and that will be worked on still in the future is developing the integration of signals everywhere. Releasing a preview of zoneless, like you said, that people can trying to go zoneless, dropping that zone.js from the dependencies. And also the third point that will be worked a lot around is server-sized rendering support. Like what it was announced at NGConf that the Angular framework is starting a heavy, let's say, collaboration. It's somehow a merger between the two major frameworks at Google. From one time, there on one side there is Wiz that powers the public apps like Google Search, Google Photo, etc. And on the other side, Angular that powers apps like the Google Cloud, for example. And they're trying to go to take the best of each of them and make it just better. For example, signals that were developed for Angular were brought to Wiz, and Wiz, which had a lot of experience and knowledge on server-side rendering, is bringing in some features that will be, for example, used for the new partial hydration. So the future really is around signals, zoneless, and server side mostly.
How do you think the upcoming Angular version, specifically version 18, will build upon the improvements introduced in V17?
So mostly what we will look at is, I think one of the goals for V18 is to make the new control flow stable. So right now it is still in developer preview, but the team aims to make it stable. The same thing is for the var blocks. So as you, the community probably have seen, since V14, every new feature is introduced as a developer preview, which allows developers to test, even ship it in production if they want to take the rest, and give a lot of feedback to the framework team. And it's really important to gather the feedback to understand every cases that developers have, use cases, and that they are discussing it with the team. Maybe sometimes they were not aware of some use cases and they made some evolutions on the API, on the features, etc. Making things stable that were in developer preview, that's first step, continue to develop around, for example, the signals. As you can see, in V17, we had the signal implementation that was stable. In 17.1.3, we had the new signal inputs. We got the model inputs. We got the new outputs. We got the we got those signals. Oh, yeah, the view queries also. So a lot of new APIs. So It's really building the new ecosystem developers will work with in when building the new Angular apps. So it's consolidating what was shipped, bring some new things, probably looking at some better signal integration. I don't know where, probably the router and the forms, for example. So looking where we can improve DX, if there can be also maybe in some cases performance improvements, and also develop new possibilities for the framework itself, namely server-side rendering with the best performance possible.
Are there any planned features or changes in Angular V18 that you are particularly excited about?
Partial hydration can be a tipping point for server-side rendering, because like I explained before, it's just about shipping something visual. You have everything visual to the client. When I say client, it's to the browser, but still having an Angular app with easy DX. So developing your SPA, you always almost developed, but shipping not the whole app that can be several megabytes, and just shipping the DOM and what's needed to bootstrap your app. So shipping less and shipping visual things directly, so you can have direct feedback on the screen for your users, and it will just be better user experience. That's the feature I love the most. But like I said, probably, if not the V18, probably in the first major minors that will come follow along it.
How will Angular V18 address the feedback and challenges encountered with zoneless change detection and new template syntax introduced in V17?
So I believe that zoneless should be a developer preview with V18. The thing is, the team will want to get as much feedback as possible. What works, let's say, what's not working as expected, understand what people maybe don't understand, develop, working a bit on the docs, etc. So to understand how people think when they work on the app and how it will impact them. What will be important is just bringing feedback, start using it, seeing it, if it suits you or not, understanding also the limits around this. So it won't be something that will be able to migrate automatically, but so it means older apps won't be able to go zoneless quite easily, but new apps or apps that have a lot of signals already can probably use and try zoneless. Apps that use heavily a sync pipe with observables can probably give it a try, etc. And there will be also another things. I believe the team will have to work on some guidance to help libraries maintainers to make the libraries compatible also with zoneless. Because right now, the Angular team has worked on the components, so Angular Material and the Angular CDK, to make it compatible with zoneless. So there's also a lot of feedback internally brought in by the team that works on the components to say, okay, what was needed, what didn't work, what we had some issues to make components compatible with zoneless.
With Angular continuous evolution, how do you see its position and competitiveness in the front-end framework market changing in the future?
Right now, Angular has impressed a lot of the developers by the pace of feature shipping. So since V14, that was 2.5 years ago, it has shipped so much features. Every 6 months, we get a new major with some amazing new features. So developers have noticed that after the Ivy migration and before standalone started, there wasn't much activity visible for the developers. It looked like it was somehow dying. But since now, the pace is keeping up so much feature has been shipped, and interesting features that people were looking for, there's a growing interest. And also there is one that to me makes a lot of sense, and people are probably not aware of it, as how the stability of Angular matters a lot. We know that the migration between AngularJS and Angular has made a lot of people mad because they had to throw everything aside from scratch. And people start to say, okay, we can't trust Angular. Google kills apps, etc. So Angular will probably disappear. I don't know. They will break again, etc. But you have to know there is one thing that people have to know and understand. The first consumer of Angular apps is Google itself. They have several thousand of apps used at Google. And every time there is a breaking change, it's the Angular team itself, not the people that develop the apps, that have to maintain and to fix the breaking change. And this is why a lot of work has been done around providing what we call the migration schematics. So every new major release, when you do ng updates, the compiler will do for you the migration from what was broken to the new APIs. And sometimes it was the schematics were also provided to just bring you the new features, the new schematics for the migrations to the control flow blocks. It works great. Have been migrated in, listen, big apps in half a day or a day to the new control flow syntax. And like snapping fingers, you have the new features on your 3-year-old app. And this is just amazing. And knowing that the stability is one of the things that the team really cares, because they have to work with the breaking changes. Knowing that Google has so many apps that relies on Angular, that is something that will stay in the long time. And as you can see, there is heavy investment into developing it, bringing new features, taking the best of other technologies at Google by somehow open sourcing the inner framework that was WES and bringing some of the features into Angular, like the first thing that landed a few days back. It's what we call the JS action that will allow event replay for partial iteration, for example, etc. So it's a whole dynamic around this that makes for me Angular a right choice. And people have been really happy with those that either stayed with it or the people that joined recently using it.
In what ways do you think Angular will continue to support and enhance developer productivity and application performance in the future?
Mainly, I would say 2 points. First, the team really cares around DX. So when they develop new APIs, they're thinking not in terms of the feature itself, but how it will be used. And one of the great examples is the DevVar block. By doing declarative API, by saying, for example, by aiming to the intention of the developer, saying, okay, the developer wants this component to be lazy loaded, and saying, no matter what the implementation is, by saying, okay, you want to lazy load it, there are some technologies today, they are handled by the compiler itself, but just by doing intention, it will allow, for example, if three years from now, there is new ways to implement the same feature, it will still have the same API by saying, okay, we want to defer this, but the implementation will be handled by the compiler itself. So first, the element for me, the one of the most important things is working on DX. And the team really matters. For the team, it matters to have great DX for developers. The second point is having APIs that also goes with performance first. So how can we help developers reach easily and great performance? And this is why, for example, in the case of the for block, making people aware of the consequences of lists and how you can help the framework understand how to behave with the elements. And this is something that has been already existing a lot of other frameworks, and Angular learns also from what's good from other frameworks. So better DX, I can give another example that was presented at ngConf recently. The team is looking at having selectorless components. So you don't have to mention the selector anymore, and you don't have to do the double imports. You know, you have the TypeScript imports. If you're doing standalone, you need to also import your component. If you could just write less code, that's part of DX. You can, if you can just write less code, it will ease even more the experience for the developers.
Finally, how do you envision the Angular community's role evolving with the advancements in Angular's core framework and ecosystem?
From my point of view, we will see more people wanting to work with Angular with all the possibilities that arise. So from my point of view, Angular had to catch the other famous frameworks. We knew, for example, that Next had some great server-side features. They were great. It's a great framework too. But if Angular couldn't provide similar things, people won't even think of Angular as a great framework to work with. So they had also to be on par with the great features that provided elsewhere. So we will see more people using it because the framework gains traction, because we ship new features, it's a dynamic one, and it also it's a fully open source one. Everybody can follow everything, have the discussion, participate to the RFC when there's one, open features request, but also open PRs. So the team welcomes community features, community contribution like I do. I am an open source contributor. I am someone that is passionate by using the framework. I work with it every day. And sometimes when there is something, I say, oh, I could bring an improvement. If you have an idea, if you don't want to write it, but just make maybe just an issue, open an issue, make suggestion. Maybe someone else will pick it. Or if you're even more motivated, you see a small improvement you can bring, you can just implement it yourself, open a PR. And if the team believes it's a great improvement, they will help you land the change. So to me, there will be a high attraction led by the features, but also by the DX. And that's what also really matters to developers, because a framework that is a pain to use is a framework that will die because nobody will want to work with it. And this is why, for me, DX is one of the most important things to work on.
That was the last technical question. We have a few more non-technical ones. Some say these are the most difficult ones. What kind of person is Matthew? How do you see yourself?
Oh, it's a great question. What I see myself? I'm a passionate guy. I'm passionate about what I do. You probably saw it. I'm passionate by, for example, collaborating with the Angular team, working on this, working on everything that is the web. I feel like I've grown with the internet. I always wanted to build a part of it. So contributing to Angular helps me being part of the bigger picture of saying, okay, we are building something bigger. So I'm really passionate about this, but probably also passionate globally in life. And I'm also really technical. This is why I have fun just working with code, like a lot of us actually do if we are developers or engineer. It depends how you see yourself.
Do you have some hints for us regarding self-organization?
Oh, I'm probably not the best example because I love to work. I say work, but for me, it's a lot of having fun. But just go with what matters to you. So if you do things that matters to you, that's what will make you happy. And don't try to overwhelm yourself. Have a balanced life. This is what really matters. So I like to work a lot. Like you told me before, you like cycling. I live in the mountains. I'm in France in the Alps. So I love go cycling in the mountains. The shiny days are back. The pass will soon open. So I will be able to ride on the Alp passes. I'm going to love that. Hiking, running, traveling. I do traveling a lot also. All the things. This is it.
Do you have any favorite hobbies?
Yeah, like I said, cycling a lot, getting lost on the internet, learning things, writing code, meeting people. When I say meeting people, it's just encountering people that are just different. I don't know. It's looking at something bigger than me.
Favorite book?
Favorite book? Good question. There's one I could mention because the author just died recently. It was Thinking Slow, Thinking Fast, I think, from Daniel Kahneman, who was a Nobel Prize in, I think, in economy a few years back. Really insightful books on biases, for example. There's a lot of content in it, but really interesting. In his work, and he works with some other people, earned him a Nobel Prize. So very interesting book. And I was thinking about it because I just learned that he died a few days back.
Favorite movie?
Favorite movie? Oh, Inglourious Basterds by Quentin Tarantino. That film, because it's in. I speak several languages. I speak French, English, and German. And that movie is mostly French, English, and German with a little bit of Italian.
Thank you so much for this amazing podcast. It was a pleasure to have you here. Yeah, I'm looking forward to see you on the stage on NG Poland this year.
I will be so happy to come, guys. I don't know with what topic yet, but I will probably share something around Angular. So if I'm able to come, I will be happy to share some knowledge and meet people and discuss a bit.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Darek. I was happy to be with you today.
Bye-bye.